Coming up next, I'm going to reveal to you the number one driver of high-performing people, and then a state is waiving degree requirements for government jobs. I'll tell you which one, and then how leaders can spur on the great retention. And I coach you up. Helping you win at work and in life. This is the Ken Coleman Show. So excited to have you with us. Okay, it's the number one driver of high-performing people. What is that fuel, if you will, that allows them to perform? You know, is it a unique combination of talent? No. Is it that they've just got a special mental toughness that nobody else has? Nope. Those all are certainly attributes, but it's not the number one driver of high performance. I'll tell you what it is in just a moment. One-third of global employees strongly agree with the statement, "The mission and purpose of my organization makes me feel my job is important." Let's break that sentence down. There's a lot in that sentence. Aren't you glad I'm not going to diagram it for you, for you that are old enough to know what diagramming a sentence was? When did they stop doing that, I wonder? Do they still do that? Do they still diagram sentences? Nobody knows. I don't think they do. But I do want to break the sentence down. One-third of global employees agree with the statement, "The mission and purpose of my organization makes me feel my job is important." There's an emotion there. The word "feel" is important. They have an emotion that leads to them valuing themselves more. See, the feeling leads to the valuing. They feel their job is important, and thus they feel they are important. The slippery slope is when someone doesn't feel their job is important, they don't feel like they are important. This is an undeniable fact. So it's really huge that people, 33%, and these are the aware people, by the way, because there's a whole lot more people who actually aren't aware of this. But 33% are very clearly aware that the mission and purpose of our company, I'm proud of it. That's what they're saying. I'm proud of it. And I know that I have a role, a part, in accomplishing this very worthwhile mission. That's what that sentence is saying. That's what's really happening. And when a company does a great job of promoting to their employees through constant dialogue, constant focus on the narrative, this is why we exist, right? That's really the phrase that has to be unpacked. This is why we exist. This is why we exist. This is why we exist. When companies do this well and employees have a connection to that mission and purpose, 51% reduction in absenteeism, 64% drop in safety incidents, and a 29% improvement in quality. That's really moving the needle, folks. Why? Engagement. All right, so there's some data about a collective group of employees and how they work. So back to the initial thought. What's the number one driver of high-performing people? A sense of mission. That's it. Now, talent is a tool. But what drives someone? You watch the documentary, as I did, and millions upon millions of others, about Michael Jordan and those Bulls teams, and they unpack this dude's unbelievable drive. You look at the Tiger Woods story, you know, coming back from a horrific car accident where he almost loses his leg. You know, comeback after comeback after comeback. Kobe Bryant's maniacal focus. Is that a function of Tiger Woods' will? Not exclusively. Is it a function of Michael Jordan's will? No, not exclusively. Is it a function of Kobe Bryant's will? We could just keep on Serena Williams. We could just go on and on and on and on and on. No, even those great athletes are very missional. They have a mission to be the greatest to ever play, to win this many majors, to overcome Jack Nicklaus, you know, whatever it is, they have a very clear mission. In other words, a destination, an arrival, a result that is driving them. It's like a magnetic pull. They can't resist it as long as they have that very clear mission. High-performing people are driven by mission. They just are. There are results that matter so much to them, they're willing to do anything possible to attain it. Sacrificing physically, right, through working out and training, overcoming unbelievable hardships as it relates to physical therapy. I mean, you look at the former Washington quarterback, Alex Smith, who had that horrific break, turns into a staph infection. And if you've seen the documentary on him and how many surgeries he had to have, some people thought he'd never walk again, much less make it back to the NFL, and he did. What allows him to do that? It's not just mental toughness. In fact, mental toughness is a result of mission. That's where I'm going. I know why I'm going there. I must go there, and nothing is going to stop me from getting there, no matter how long it takes or how hard it is. I'm going to get there. That's mission. So driven towards a result, a desired future. So one of the problems in our workforce around the globe, not just in the United States, is that companies don't get this. Leaders don't get that. I think they inherently know it if I were to sit down and interview them, but they don't lead that way because the company problem, this is just a personal problem. If you're not working with a sense of mission, you aren't going to be fulfilled. That's true. But part of the problem is that companies don't help you see mission in your work. They don't do a good job of communicating their mission, the company's mission. So people don't see how they can connect to their work because we all have a personal mission. And if we can't connect that personal mission to something greater than ourselves, the company, the people the company exists to serve, well, then we got ourselves a problem. We have a problem. So what's the solution? Personally, the solution is take the Get Clear Career Assessment. Take it. Get a real sense. There are six motivators that we call missional results that everybody has. Where do you score high? Where do you score low? What kind of work would allow you to create those results, which would then automatically motivate you? Answer the question. What results do I want to put in this world? How do I want to contribute to this world through my work? Answer that question. Now you're getting a sense of mission. To leaders, you better do a really good job of helping them see that they're a part of a much greater mission than just a paycheck and doing work that's purposeful to them, but there's something greater going on. Cast vision about the mission. The reason for the solution? Watch employee engagement jump. Look at those results I talked about earlier. 51% reduction in absenteeism, 64% drop in safety incidents. That's engagement right there. They're not calling in sick, and they aren't making stupid bonehead mistakes. In the news coming up, don't go anywhere. Helping you win at work and in life. This is the Ken Coleman Show, and one of the ways to win at work is to actually find yourself in what I call a sweet spot. A job where you're spending three-fourths of the majority of your day using what you do best, that's your talent, to do work you really love, that's passion, and creating, producing results that matter deeply to you. That's a sense of mission. That is a missional role. And when you're doing that, you were on fire. So many of you are looking for that role, but the idea of looking makes you sick to your stomach. What if looking for a great job was easy and free? Would it perk your interest? I think it would. If you're new to the show, I'm a huge fan of ZipRecruiter. because they get the tension. And that you talk about a company that's mission driven. They're trying to make the job search so much easier. So much pain and ghosting and frustration involved. They take all that away because their artificial intelligence software, once you fill out a profile in just minutes at ZipRecruiter.com, they begin to match up all of the jobs that are listed with them because companies are paying them for access to you. That's why it's free to you. They'll send you jobs that they think you ought to apply for based on your profile. Oh, by the way, once they do, not an arduous process. One click takes your resume, boop. I think it even makes that sound. I'm kidding. I have no idea what sound it makes. And it'll send it on to people. Sign up for free. ZipRecruiter.com. Let them work for you while you're working. ZipRecruiter.com. All right. A couple of interesting stories. And that's what we do here. Keep you informed so that you can find, do the work you love. Let's go in the news. All right, it is no secret if you've listened to me for any amount of time, I'm not a huge fan of our government. So much waste, so much obnoxiousness. But when government does something right, I'm going to say, way to go, government. And here we got a good government story. Maryland is officially dropping the 4-year college degree requirement from many of their state jobs. This announced by Governor Larry Hogan. The state is launching what he calls a first-in-the-nation workforce development program to recruit qualified workers who do not hold college degrees. Around 38,000 people are currently employed by the state of Maryland, and nearly half of those jobs could be performed by qualified candidates without 4-year degrees, according to the governor. Can I just tell you that I think that is low? Half. Let's be honest. Come on, it's probably 95%. Regardless, I'm trying to give the good governor of Maryland. I don't know if he's a good governor or not, by the way. I realize you say anything like that anymore, and it's like, oh boy, somebody in the audience is like, do you know this guy? No, I don't know anything about him. Full disclosure, I didn't mean he was actually a good governor. It was just a phrase. Look at the world we're in right now. I got to back out of just saying something nice. Anyway, have a little fun here. So Maryland has teamed up with a workforce development nonprofit by the name of Opportunity at Work. And the nonprofit is doing the vetting. We really want an economy that if you can do the job, you can get the job, said Byron Augusta, CEO of Opportunity at Work. I like that, Byron. I agree with you. That's what I want. This organization calls qualified non-degree worker stars. I love this, Alex. I think I want to steal this. So could you please make note of this? I'm going to steal this. STARS stands for Skilled Through Alternative Routes. Isn't that fun? I like that. Skilled Through Alternative Routes. STAR. There's nothing for the S there. But we'll give them. You're a star. I like that. It'd be interesting to see if this is a domino effect. Because here's what I know about government, right? One governor does it. They go to their governor's association and they're eating shrimp the size of a horse head. And they're talking, that's what I'm doing in my state. And rah, rah, rah. And this very well could be a positive trend. We'll see. I don't know if it's first in the nation. Larry says it is. That's the governor, Larry. By the way, that word, that's a funny word for me. It's a funny name. I really enjoy saying it. You know, I have a lot of the Uncle Larrys when I get into these rants. So this is Governor Larry. So kudos to you, Governor Larry. All right, next. So we've been talking a lot about the Great Resignation for really about a year and a half, maybe longer. And the Great Resignation has spurred a massive pain point for businesses. Retention, right? Musical chairs is what's been going on. People chasing a bigger paycheck. I don't blame them. It's a carrot that people are just dangling out in front of them, right? And okay, I'm going to take it. So retention has always been and always will be the name of the game for leaders. You know, you got to keep good people. And we spent a good amount of time on this show talking about this. And so this article here that I want to touch on is now calling this the Great Retention. And this is, they're going to go, this is where we need to go. Well, I don't think we're anywhere near the Great Retention right now, because I don't think leaders have a clue what to do, by and large. And we still are in an arms race as it relates to companies offering really great packages. And so it's just a musical chairs game. I'm leaving this chair to sit in this chair, and this is just repeating. It's not slowing down. But I appreciate what they're saying. But the heart of this article is, if you can deal with employee stress, you can retain more people. That's partly true. There's no question that we know the physical effects that stress has on the body, and we obviously know the emotional and mental effects that stress has on the body. But you could have an organization that does a really great job of eliminating or relieving stress for people. But if people aren't engaged, they may be not so stressed, but if they're not engaged, it's still not going to stay. So I just want to point out that I think we as leaders have got to be paying attention to stress. There's no question about it. But that's not the silver bullet. Engagement, where an employee comes to work because they're excited to be there, and they see how that job, watch this, leads to a better life. Now we have engagement, all right? Stress or no stress, we got to de-stress work environments, no question about it. All right, so this is very interesting. I'm reading between the lines here. But for leaders that are listening and viewing this right now, this is not as simple as you getting feedback from employees. All right, feedback's important. You got to know what's stressing them, what's triggering stuff. Really dive in there, okay? But that's not always going to get you everything you need to know. Remember, trust must be established to get the truth. I'll say that again. If you really want to know, leaders, what your employees feel and think, you must establish trust. Listen, the number one fear that people have when you ask for their feedback is, if I tell them the truth, are they going to fire me? I'm just telling you. Self-protectionism is way more powerful than you doing your fact-finding. 50% of workers right now believe their boss does not value their opinion. So how in the world are you going to get somebody to tell you the truth when half of the workforce feels like, you know what? I don't think my leader cares what I think. And then on top of that, if you've not established trust where they know that you have their best interest in mind and you really do want to know what they think, you value it, well, they're not going to tell you. Come on, leaders, wake up. Relationship 101 stuff here. Don't move. Coaching calls coming up. Welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show, helping you make more income and experience more impact. I just tweaked the mic there. Just, you know, rubbing the chin. Doink. Hit the mic. Let's go to Christian next in Houston, Texas. Christian, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hi, Ken.
How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thank you for asking, sir. Better than I deserve.
There we go. There's a Ramsey Show listener. How can I help today?
Well, about 6 years ago, I was approached to join this company, and well, the job started off simple enough, but it slowly transformed into my current role, which is just, it's really overwhelming and stressful. And I mean, these are my friends we're talking about, and I'm not sure how to have the conversation to say, look, this has really morphed into something that I can't handle, and I need to change something.
Yeah. What's your big fear in saying it the wrong way? So forget about how we say it. Let's just assume that your fear comes true, that you say that or present it the wrong way. What's our biggest fear on the other side of that?
That I'm a failure.
Okay. Who determines that?
I'm not sure. I guess me, I have pretty high standards for myself, and I feel like, well, I agreed to this, and said, hey, can you do this? And I said, yes, I'll do it.
Well, wait a second. Did you agree to it under its current form or in its current form with all that stress? When you said yes, did it look like that? Did it feel like that?
No.
How long has it taken to develop into what it is currently with all this high stress and overwhelmingness?
It's weird. It started in 2019, but then once the pandemic hit, we really went to kind of light things. And so it was easy. I didn't have as much responsibility. There wasn't nearly as much stress. And so that was fine. But now that we're kind of back to operating as normal and all that responsibility is on there,
Are you just simply not able to get it all done? There's too much coming at you?
A bit. It's I have to get it all done. I have to work long hours because of the responsibility and the nature of the job. If I take time off, I still have that work waiting for me. I have to get it done beforehand or after the fact. There's no...
Okay. So when they asked you to do the job, it was in a lighter season, and now it's gotten to another level, and it's like, whoa, this is too much. So
it was very basic. It was sort of like, we're looking at transitioning people out. We're looking at kind of doing this different role. And so, yeah, it wasn't...
Okay, I got it. So here's the deal. Yeah. So your worst fear is that you personally will look at yourself as a failure. So you're not worried about getting fired over this.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think you are. I wasn't asking. I'm telling. I think that's good news. So you're the one who determines if you are a failure, not anybody else. I mean, a true failure, the way you defined it. You were like, I said, what is your fear on the other side of telling them that you're overwhelmed? That I'm a failure. That's personal, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's a label.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sticker that you're talking about putting on yourself. I'm not going to think you're a failure. I doubt these friends that you say or your friends are going to think you're a failure if you say, I'm overwhelmed. I mean, if you remember those old cartoons, I don't know how old you are, Christian, but you ever remember seeing a cartoon, whether it was Looney Tunes or something where...
Yeah.
Or Popeye or something where we see the kind of prototypical cabinet and all of the dishes are falling off at once and the cartoon characters back. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
All right. If that person turns and goes, I'm going to drop them all help, do we go, they're a loser? Or what's the reaction to that scene?
Well, you try and help out.
All right, then. I think you got to have a real conversation. I don't think you can keep this up much longer. I feel like I'm talking to a guy who's at his wit's end.
Yeah.
What's the physical that's happening to you? What's the mental? What's the emotion? I'm not going to make you tell me, but you can't keep this up. It's not good.
Yeah, because
it's not good.
No, I mean it's when I stepped away from taking care of myself, I was gaining weight. I wasn't sleeping well. It was
Hey, Christian, tough. I got news for you. You're a really good dude. I think you're probably a guy I'd love to hang with, probably somebody I'd brag about knowing, but I hate to let you down. You're not Superman, and you need to stop acting like Superman. You're a good man. You ain't Superman. You feel me?
Yes, sir.
Stop acting like Superman. Superman complex is going to turn into broken man in reality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't want you to be broken. So it's time to put your big boy pants on and acknowledge that you're really not afraid of getting fired because you're a good guy, you got high character. What you're really afraid of is what somebody's going to think of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what's really going on. I don't think that you're going to truly think of yourself as a failure unless you think that somebody else thinks you're a failure. So what you're really afraid of is what they're going to think of you, because you said, I can do it. And now you think that they're going to think you're a loser and that you're weak and that you're not good enough. That's what's really going on.
And now that you say it out loud, it just, yeah, it seems obvious.
But Christian, you and I both know that that's not true. That's a lie from the pit of hell, true or false?
True.
All right, then. There's no dishonor in saying, help! There's none. Not at all. And this is beyond Christian. I think a lot of people need to hear this. You admitting that you need help is not you admitting that you are a failure. I want to say that one more time. And I want to say it, and I'm looking at this camera right here, and if that's you, I want you to look me in the eye. You admitting that you need help. Help relationally. Help professionally. Help physically. Help spiritually. I don't care in what area of life you feel like I can't hold on much longer. I need help. Help is human. It is the greatest quality of our human nature to help others in need. So you asking for help doesn't make you helpless. You're not weak and pathetic and pitiful. No, you just need help in one area. You need help. But when we aren't willing to ask for help, we begin to lose hope. But when we ask for help and we get help, we get hope. And Christian needs hope that he can enjoy work again. He needs hope that he can still take care of himself, his family, whatever, and not feel so stressed out and overwhelmed. Boy, oh boy. Being overwhelmed is, in many ways, feeling helpless. And so what do we do when we're feeling helpless? Ask for help. Help. I hate that term helpless. It just occurred to me. Right? It means you're not worthy of help. Really? It's not true. Or you can't help yourself. That's not true either. Because, you know, if I can't get myself out of a bear trap, but Joe walks along the path and I realize I don't have the strength to open up the bear trap to let my leg out. Boy, that's a gruesome example. Not sure where that came from. I am not helpless. You know why I'm not helpless? Because I could say, hey, sir, will you help me? And in asking for help, I have helped myself. But I got to tell you, I understand why we have this block in our human psyche to ask for help. Because Christian was vulnerable enough and honest enough to really say what was going on. He said, I don't want to consider myself a failure. But he would only consider himself a failure, and he admitted this, if he thought that others thought or said he was a failure. And that's why we don't want to ask for help. Help doesn't make you weak. Help makes you wise. Ask for it. You matter. You have what it takes. This is the Ken Coleman Show. Press on.
Thanks for listening to the Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.
If you enjoy this podcast, you should check out other great podcasts from the Ramsey Network, like The Rachel Cruze Show.
Money should be fun, not stressful. I'm Rachel Cruze, and I'll show you practical tips on how to save money in your everyday life and get out of debt even faster on The Rachel Cruze Show. I'll show you that you can take control of your money and create a life you love. Listen to The Rachel Cruze Show wherever you listen to podcasts.